Radio.
Jesus, Fact or Fiction? A talk by Robert Haddad at the UTS Catholic Society's Christ Week.
Thanks very much. I've got the title of this talk as Jesus of Nazareth, Fact or Fantasy, but that's the same as Fact or Fiction. Okay, so I think you're going to hear some things today for the first time that might surprise you. When we want to talk about, the usual talks are about whether Jesus was God or Jesus was Lord, liar or lunatic, etc. But there's an actual new movement out there which is digging a little bit deeper and saying that Jesus didn't even exist at all. So I'm going to be discussing this. Most of what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is going to be relating to this movement, which though still on the fringe, is gaining some traction here and there, and it has a formal name. Anyway, most of us, I presume, most of us are believers in Jesus. When I say that, I mean you would take without question the standard beliefs that Jesus was the divine Son of God, who while on earth did miracles, died, rose again, ascended into heaven, seated at the right hand of the Father. And you take that on faith axiomatically. When I mean by axiomatically, without question, it came to you via perhaps your parents, reinforced by your local parish, undermined by your local school. No, it's just a joke, okay? Supposedly supported by your local school. And then, you know, you just didn't really think about it that much deeply afterwards because it was a given for you. This view of Christianity, this view of Jesus Christ, was the predominant view among believers, among Catholics, Orthodox, mainstream Protestants, in the Western world up until about the 18th century. From the 18th century onwards, particularly the movement, or that period we call the Enlightenment, we have a new series of scholars, if you can call them that, who wanted to search for the real Jesus, or they began what they called the quest for the historical Jesus. This is the presupposition here, is that the Jesus of the Bible that I related to you already, the divine Son of God who did miracles, died, rose from the dead, etc. The Jesus of the Bible is really just a fiction. It's just the invention, particularly, most probably, of a disappointed church, of a church in the late first century or somewhere in the second century that failed to see Jesus come again, as he promised, as St. Paul believed, so evidently in his writings, that Jesus was going to return very soon. So to keep this fledgling movement going so that it would not vanish and disappear, we had to reinvigorate this Jesus, turbocharge him, make him competitive in the marketplace of gods and heroes, semi-gods, etc., that existed, that were numerous, so numerous and commonplace in the Greco-Roman world. So who are some of these people during the late Renaissance onwards who began this search for the historical Jesus? Some of you might know these names. The first was Reimarus in the late 18th century. Then you had others from Germany like Bauer and the Tubingen School of Scholars. Then a Frenchman named Renan, another German named Harnack, another famous German living well into the 20th century, Albert Schweitzer. Then another German scholar, Rudolf Bultmann. And then we've got some contemporaries today, Borg and Crossan. They're out there engaging in these quests. Now, for those who study the quests for the historical Jesus, identify this quest as being in four phases. We're currently in the fourth phase of the search for the real Jesus. Now, if any of you read Pope Benedict's books, the series on Jesus of Nazareth, he does focus on some of these men just named and their attempts to search for the real Jesus of Nazareth. And he comes to a basic conclusion, which is very common sense, that all these people searching for the real historical Jesus end up giving us all different contradictory versions of who this historical Jesus really was. And so this quest has tended to flounder because although they agree on what they reject, that is the divinity of Christ, that he performed miracles, that he rose from the dead, that's what they agree on. That's what they reject. They can't agree on what to construct in its place. Was Jesus the feminist Jesus? Was Jesus the social revolutionary Jesus? Radical? The type of Jesus that comes across in Jesus Christ Superstar? Long haired, smoking marijuana, having girlfriends, things like that. I mean, this is what's out there. Okay, we can laugh at it, but it's quite serious, really. Now, but one thing I have to say to the credit of these gentlemen in these various quests for the historical Jesus, at least they all believed that there was a Jesus of Nazareth, that he existed, that there was a historical person from Nazareth called Jesus who went around in the early first century AD and did some astonishing things and gathered a crowd around him, formed a movement that persists to this day. But now we've come to a phase, well, it's actually not now. This is more than this is about a century old already, not a little bit more. The movement called mythicism. Who's heard of mythicism from the point of view with respect to Jesus? Mythicism is a movement which says that the very idea that there was a Jesus of Nazareth is a pure myth. He didn't exist at all. And mythicists go a little bit further when it comes to claiming who was a myth. It's not just Jesus. They actually go further and say, like, for example, Moses didn't exist or Abraham didn't exist or whatever. Anyway, now this movement says that for Christians to believe in Jesus, it's like little kids believing in Marvel comic superheroes like Batman or Superman, or what's the latest, Ant-Man, okay? So this is how, if it's okay, it's okay. We know that these characters didn't exist. They're ideals produced by our own minds. We wish these figures existed. We wish there was a Superman character to lead us out of our current crises in the modern world. And the mythicists say that it was exactly the same with respect to Jesus. Jesus was invented by a community or a group of persons who wanted this type of hero to exist, this ideal figure. Now, mythicism currently is still a fringe movement. It's not really a mainstream academic movement. But what I'm concerned about is that whatever starts on the fringe ultimately does become center, does eventually or will eventually become mainstream. Who knows when that will be? But in actual fact, in some countries, it was once the formal creed. The Soviet Union, as a former empire, and we still have the Chinese Communist Empire in existence, the Soviet Union adopted mythicism as its formal creed from the time of the revolution under Lenin onwards. Their view is that Jesus never existed. And before the Soviet Union was created by Lenin, we had a book like the official godfather of mythicism is a fellow named Arthur Drew, who brought out, he published his book in 1909 called The Christ Myth. And as I said, this became adopted as the formal creed of the Soviet Union. If you want to, there are plenty of websites out there. If you want to have a look at one as a starting point where you'll get plenty of contributors with mythic IDs, and that is infidels.org. Any of you got that as one of your favorites at the moment? Infidels.org? Okay. Well, have a look at infidels.org. And as a starting point, perhaps, I've got some other names we can refer to. These are some of the popular writers today. When I say popular, I don't mean really academic or scholars, but if you're into the mythicism movement, these are the hero writers at the moment. Freck, Gandhi, Humphreys. The most popular is a woman who grows under this pseudonym, Acharia S. S. Dot. The latter, Acharia, has written this book, The Christ Myth, the greatest story ever sold. We've got some videos coming out from the mythicism movement, Zeitgeist, and the 2005 documentary, The God Who Wasn't There. Now, what's some of the evidence? Let's put some meat on the bones when it comes to the mythicist movement. What do they say? What do they claim is evidence for their beliefs? They say, firstly, as I've already mentioned, that Jesus was really invented as a figure to parallel other gods or demigods that existed in the ancient world, particularly the dying and rising pagan gods. When Jesus died, rise from the dead, okay, and this death-rising model has been in imitation of other pagan gods who also went through a similar path. For example, the Egyptian god Osiris died and his mutilated body parts were reassembled so that he could live on in the underworld. Then we have the Persian god Mithras. By the way, Mithras was only a god, only admitted male adherents. Only men were allowed to be worshippers of Mithras. And it was a very popular god for men in the military. And Mithraism started in Persia, and we know it spread right across the Roman Empire, and we have Mithraic temples being uncovered in London. And Mithraism believed, well, Mithras was also a figure who was born of a virgin, sound familiar? And asked his followers to undergo a form of water baptism. And again, very familiar. Also, in the late first century, we have another character who hung around Asia Minor named Apollonius of Tyana. Who's heard of Apollonius? Well, let me tell you about what his biographer wrote about him. His biographer was a fellow named Philostratus, who published a work, The Life of Apollonius of Tyana, and says of this fellow, Apollonius, that as a young child, he showed great wisdom, performed notable healings as an adult, predicted the future, performed exorcisms, appeared to his followers after his death, and lo and behold, afterwards ascended into heaven. Sound familiar? Okay, Apollonius. Now, Apollonius is not an invention of the mythicism movement. People who know anything about first century religions and trying to study Christianity's struggle in those early years would know about Apollonius of Tyana and these claims. So the Christians, in order to survive, they needed to turbocharge Jesus, or in the case of the mythicists, to actually invent such a character and carry on their trade under this invented character. Now, the mythicists go on to say that if the Jesus of the Bible, if there really was a Jesus of Nazareth who did such outstanding miracles publicly, had a large following, took on the authorities publicly, died, and then rose again afterwards and was hanging around sometime afterwards, then you'd be getting plenty of more people writing about him around the time he existed, not just a handful of, you know, unknown people. Freck and Gandy, who I mentioned earlier, in their book, The Jesus Mysteries, state that there were 27 major authors who lived and wrote within 100 years of Jesus. Yet not one of these authors ever mentioned Jesus once. And for them, that's evidence that Jesus did not exist, especially not the Jesus of the Bible. That would be too significant a personality to be ignored. This includes a first century writer named Justus, who wrote History of the Jewish Kings. He had time to write the History of the Jewish Kings, but never mentioned once this other son of David, king of the Jews, who rose from the dead. More evidence that this king of the Jews, Jesus, never really existed in the first place. Well, that's basically summing up in the short time we have the rudiments of the mythicist claim. Now, our talk today is about whether Jesus, fact or fiction, fact or fantasy. I presume most of us are coming here believing that he was a fact. So how are we going to counter these claims? Really, without not that much difficulty, really, but still there's a challenge to be met. 27 authors were there. Were there really 27 authors within 100 years of Jesus who wrote on history and all of them ignored or didn't even know about Jesus? Not really. The reality is most of these 27 authors that are listed by the mythicists were not historians at all. Were not concerned about writing about history. And even those who were historians, you've got to put yourself in the context of that time. For us, Jesus is a very, very significant, if not the most significant figure of all time. But in the first century, if you are part of the Roman, Greco-Roman establishment, in which the Roman Empire was still rising in power and in extent, Jesus was an insignificant character, utterly insignificant character. No wealth, no education, no power, no lineage, nothing. Nothing to make him significant in the eyes of the world. For anyone who knew anything about him, who was not a believer, who was not a Christian, Jesus was no more than a guru, a latest guru, religious, someone of religious intensity who took on the authorities at a certain time and ended up being crucified and died, and that's it. Not really the type of material for non-Christians to focus on as significant. So what I'm claiming here is that even those historians that did exist wouldn't have seen Jesus as worthwhile writing about anyway in the bigger context of empire and emperor and you know what the Romans were dealing with on the frontiers with the barbarians and the Persians in the east and elsewhere. For them, if they heard about Jesus claiming to be king of the Jews, it would have been dismissed in the same way if we hear about someone today claiming to be some woman in England today claiming to be the real Queen of England in opposition to Elizabeth II, or some guy going around claiming to be the real Pope in opposition to Pope Francis. We would look at those type of characters from our perspective as a bit of fringe loony. And it would be understandable, and it would be the norm to think of historians, non-Christian historians in the first century, would have had no more regard for Jesus than we would have for those type of fringe characters today. But nevertheless, there certainly is extra-biblical evidence, that is evidence outside of the Bible, that shows clearly that non-Christians and historic and history writers did acknowledge that a Jesus of Nazareth existed. Just as a parallel point here, Pontius Pilate, he's part of the Christian story. He's central to the Christian story. If we deny that Jesus ever existed, well, one would have to probably question the whole story and all the other characters mentioned in that story. So did Pontius Pilate exist? Well, historically, we know he did. Here are the historians who do mention Pontius Pilate. Philo of Alexandria. Now, Philo of Alexandria was a Jew, but a Hellenistic Jew who lived in Egypt, at Alexandria in Egypt, from the year 30 to the late 1st century AD. Josephus, the great Jewish historian, who wrote in the very last decade of the first century, great works on Jewish history, certainly mentions Pontius Pilate. The Roman historian Tacitus mentions Pontius Pilate. And we know since the 1960s, with the discovery of certain coins in the Holy Land, that those coins bear the name of Pontius Pilate. And I've seen a picture myself of a stone pillar discovered in the Holy Land, which mentions Pontius Pilate. So there is hardcore, clear, extra-biblical evidence for the existence of Pontius Pilate. The reason why I mention this is that in the face of this type of evidence, mainstream historians or even fringe historians do not dare to challenge or to question the existence of Pontius Pilate. Well, similar type of evidence exists for the mentioning Jesus of Nazareth from the same time, from the first century AD. The same writers. Josephus mentions Jesus in Book 20 of his Antiquities of the Jews. And this was written around the year 94. This book records the stoning of lawbreakers in the year 62. And to quote, who was one of those who were put to death? Quote, the brother of Jesus, who was called Christ, whose name was James. This reference of Josephus corresponds to the Catholic tradition that James the Less, the apostle, whose father was Alphaeus, brother of Saint Joseph, and that's why he's called brother of Jesus, is actually a first cousin. He was martyred in Jerusalem in the year 62. And so Josephus, in talking about, really aiming to talk about James as a martyr for law breaking, on the side mentions the fact that he was the brother of Jesus, called the Christ. This reference in Antiquities is accepted as authentic by all scholars. One example, Robert Van Voorst. The reason why, because the reference, the mention of Jesus is just passing. There's no elaboration here in the writings of a Jew, and Josephus remained a Jew until his death. There's no reference here by Josephus or in these writings of Josephus that Jesus was the Lord, right? That he was the Messiah, etc. So one can't argue that this was a Christian interpolation. That is an addition that came afterwards. But there is a second reference in the writings of Josephus to Jesus of Nazareth, contained in the earlier book 18 in the same work, Antiquities. This reference to Jesus is a longer one, far more detailed, and greatly contested by scholars, highly controversial, because most probably, and I believe this myself, most probably, this second reference does have Christian interpolations, has been interfered with, and has some Christian afterwards have added certain words into the original of Josephus, such as he was the Christ, he appeared again on the third day. If Josephus really believed Jesus was the Christ and appeared on the third day, then he would have died a Christian. But we know he didn't die a Christian, so he probably didn't write those words. But he certainly wrote something originally in Book 18. And we have a great scholar by the name of James D.G. Dunn, who has reconstructed probably what Josephus' original reference to Jesus of Nazareth was. And I'll read it out here. This is probably what Josephus wrote originally. At this time there appeared Jesus, a wise man. For he was a doer of startling deeds, a teacher of people who received the truth with pleasure. And he gained a following both among many Jews and among many of Greek origin. And when Pilate, because of an accusation made by the leading men among us, condemned him to the cross, those who had loved him previously did not cease to do so. And up to this very day, the tribe of Christians named after him has not died out. So that's a very, very solid reference, historical reference outside of the Bible to the asserting that there was existing once a man named Jesus of Nazareth who did certain wonderful things and his followers continue to this day. After Josephus, we have another writer, Tacitus, who wrote in his Annals of Imperial Rome, written around the year 116, the following. Christus, the founder of the name, was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea in the reign of Tiberius. Very short, very sharp. But this passage exists in all 20 copies that we still have of Tacitus' Annals of Imperial Rome. And scholars agree that because there's no reference to Jesus' divinity or being the Messiah or rising from the dead, that it's most probably an original writing of Tacitus, unquestioning when it comes to the existence of this Christ person who suffered under Pontius Pilate. Then we come up to another Roman historian, Suetonius, just a half a dozen years later, in the year 121, wrote his Lives of the Caesars, where he refers to, in the chapter entitled Claudius, chapter 25, says the following: since the Jews constantly made disturbances at the instigation of Crestus, he expelled them from Rome. So Jews are expelled from Rome by the Emperor Claudius. It's around the year 49. Because of some troublemaker called Crestus, at the instigation of Crestus. Is this authentic? Who is Suetonius referring to? Who was Crestus? This is what's been the debate. From our point of view, as a prima facie position, it is highly unlikely that a hypothetical Christian interpolator would have called Jesus Crestus, placed him in Rome in the late 40s, or called him a troublemaker. So the overwhelming majority of scholars conclude that this passage in Suetonius's writings certainly is not an interpolation. He wrote it himself. Mythicists, though, claim that this Crestus wasn't Jesus at all, wasn't Christ at all, wasn't Christus, and was not even a Christian, but was a Jew. When you read the text, the Jews constantly made disturbances at the instigation of Crestus. So according to mythicists, Crestus is actually a Jewish troublemaker who stirred the Jews up in Rome, and as a consequence, Claudius kicked the Jews out of Rome in the late 40s. But it's interesting, in the scriptures, in the Christian scriptures and the Acts of the Apostles, there's also a reference to this same historical event. In Acts 18:2-3, we see that St. Paul met a Jewish Christian named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. So from that reference in the Acts of the Apostles, this corroborates historically what Suetonius. St. Luke is writing this in the early 60s, recording something that happened about a dozen years earlier. Suetonius is coming 60 years even after that, talking about the same event. So this event happened, and this event didn't just catch Jews, it caught Jews who were also believers in Christ, who were Christians. Why? Because they were the two antagonists here. They were fighting over someone called Crestus. Now, in the mind of Suetonius, you know, 70 years later, the word Christus comes to him as Crestus, and he records it as Crestus. So that's probably what this is all about. Suetonius is recording struggles or clashes between Jews and Christians in Rome in the late 40s, probably in the 14th precinct of Rome, where the Jews were a significant community, and they're arguing among themselves over Crestus, and this probably got violent to some extent, and to kick him out, to solve the problem, Claudius just kicked the Jews out, and he didn't have any distinction between Jews who were non-believers or believers in Jesus. They all went out of Rome. So again, it's a historical reference, really, to the fact that there was an early Christian community in the first half of the first century AD who were believing in this Christ figure, and this is mentioned outside of the Bible in extra-biblical evidence. So my point here is that if we don't question the historical references to Pontius Pilate, which assert that he existed, the same type, the same quality of references to Jesus of Nazareth shouldn't be questioned either. And so this would undermine the mythicist claim that this Jesus Christ never existed in the first place. We also have in the same writers, in Tacitus, in Suetonius, references not just to this Christ figure, but to the Christian community in general. And they refer to this Christian community as a new superstition, which was persecuted by Nero Caesar in AD 54. So that has, those historical references corroborate what the scriptures tell us, that a Christian community had begun in the first half of the first century AD, and that it was significant and public enough by the time of Nero to deserve blame and persecution for the fires in Rome. It is utterly unreasonable to suppose that any movement can begin without a founder. The Christian movement claims to have had a founder. Which movement do we know of, that especially one that has existed for centuries, ever came into existence unless it was actually founded by someone and be spread by adherents all sharing a common story, unless at least some of these adherents were witnesses to that story and or knew the original founder? If Jesus didn't exist, then we have to look at the gospel writers as fictional, fantasy writers, frauds. But when we look at the same gospels and what they say about the same authors, the same apostles, what do we see? The apostles were not the men to foist such a huge deception upon the world. The very gospels they wrote showed themselves to be, one, ignorant, to be, two, cowardly. And ultimately, though, they were men of courage. And why would people be willing, as all the apostles did, bar St. John, why would these men be willing to die for something which was just a myth, that was just a fantasy that they concocted? They were men who were originally cowardly, originally weak, but something transformed them to be courageous and to be willing to die for something. And you're only reasonable people are only willing to die for something if that thing or that person actually existed and are witnesses to some extraordinary event. All right. The next part of this presentation is to say, well, look, digging a bit deeper again. What you Christians believe in when it comes to Jesus is essentially contained in the Gospels. Let's face it, isn't it? Divine Son of God who died, rose again, did miracles, all that. It's in the Gospels. And for us, that's enough evidence, isn't it? Well, at least among ourselves and perhaps, and of course, with other Christians of other denominations who believe in the Bible. But really, when we're dealing with a world which is increasingly secular, increasingly agnostic, atheist, unbelieving, we are completely out of our depth if we're going to just rely upon the Gospels as evidence that Jesus existed. But still, we don't vacate the field. We can still insist on the Gospels as historical documents. In addition to being the written word of God, inspired by God, etc., which we take on by faith, are the Gospels historical documents, reliable historical documents? Now, here, going back to the four quests, this is where they completely tear apart the Gospels and say they're non-historical. There are many people, unfortunately, in universities with Christian names that don't believe that the Gospels are historical documents, reliable historical documents. My claim here, basically in the next 10 minutes, is that they are. By the standards that are applied to all other ancient documents, applying those same standards to the Gospels, we can definitely stand upon the Gospels as reliable historical documents, being reliable histories for the very life of Jesus. When we look at the Gospels, of course, the claims that Jesus died and rose from the dead are all there, that he was the divine person are all there. I'm looking at quotes from John 1, John 8, John 20, my Lord and my God, St. Thomas, John 20, 28, St. Paul in Romans 9, 5, in Philippians 2, in Colossians 2, the author to the letter to the Hebrews. Those are just a sample, just a handful of a half a dozen quotes, which clearly show that those writers believe that Jesus was divine, for example. And firstly, he existed, and secondly, that he was divine. And the rest of the Gospels tell us consistently that Jesus died and rose from the dead, etc. But what's the evidence that we can put forward that these documents were, one, written by witnesses, and therefore written in the first century AD, and that there hasn't been any evidence of subsequent tampering, interpolations, changes. As many believe, the Gospels were really second century documents written by a disappointed community. But if we can show evidence from the first century, from the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh century, that the Gospel record has been the same and that the fragments, the manuscripts we have from those early centuries, that their contents correspond with each other and correspond with the Bible we have today, then we can say without a doubt that these documents are historically reliable records written by the witnesses. And we can stand on those documents as historical records. Briefly, what are the samples we have? What do we possess? We don't possess the original autographs written by the apostles. That is, the handwritten original copies written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or St. Paul, or St. James, or St. Peter. We don't. What we have is copies of copies of copies of copies of copies. We have codices that are books, manuscript, whole manuscripts, books with leaves, certain leaves, numbers of leaves, fragments, one-page fragments, minuscules, pieces of a page. Altogether, we have over 24,000 ancient minuscules, fragments, leaves, scrolls, codices from the ancient world when it comes to the New Testament alone. What are some of the examples? The Q75 manuscript, a fragment of the Gospel of Mark, predates the year 70. John Wieland's manuscript, known as the P52 manuscript, written around the year 130 of St. John's Gospel, chapter 18, a fragment of John's Gospel, chapter 18. The Chester Beatty papyri, found in Egypt in 1931, written around the mid-second century, anywhere between the mid-second century and the early 3rd century. 180 leaves of the Old Testament, 30 leaves from the Gospels and Acts, 20 leaves from the writings of St. Paul in the book of Revelation. The Bodmer Codex, discovered in 1955, 154-page manuscript in Greek of St. John's Gospel, written in Egypt in the second half of the second century, contains the first 14 chapters of John and fragments of the remaining seven. Then we have scripture embedded in writings of the early church fathers from the first and second century AD, St. Clement of Rome, Ignatius of Antioch, as an example, two examples. Even in the Gnostic Gospels, we have authentic Christian verses imported, embedded into Gnostic Gospels from the second and third centuries. And we have, from the fourth to the seventh century, we have whole codices, books, volumes. Codex Vaticanus, Codex Sinaiticus, Codex Alexandrinus, Codex Bizet, Codex Ephraemi, Codex Amiatinus. Why am I saying all this? Because when we put them all together, whether they be minuscules, fragments, leaves, scrolls, codices, and we examine all the verses contained, all the words, all the letters contained, there's no evidence of any major discrepancy. We have minor discrepancies. We have copious errors. In fact, among these 24,000 plus pieces of ancient evidence of the New Testament writings, we have discrepancies affecting 78% of the New Testament. But they're copious errors, spelling mistakes, missing words, a missing sentence, something added. But we don't have anything different when it comes to the substantive. Regarding their very person, life, works, sayings, death, resurrection of Jesus, everything contained across those 24,000 plus pieces of evidence is absolutely consistent with respect to Jesus existing and what he said, what he did, how he died, how he rose from the dead. There's no evidence of any conspiracy or otherwise to invent someone post the first century AD, or to change the actual reality of, to add to the record that this Jesus really did rise from the dead, etc., etc. It's consistent from beginning to end. I put that out there because, again, by way of comparison, when we look at other non-Christian ancient writings, and I'll give you examples here, the writings of Homer and the Iliad, we have only 643 copies. the writings of Sophocles, 193, the writings of Aristotle, 49, the writings of Tacitus, as I said earlier, 20, and they date no earlier than the 9th century AD. Tacitus wrote in the first part of the 2nd century AD. The writings of Caesar, 10 copies, the earliest 9th century AD. Herodotus 8, Pliny 7. When we look at those ancient writers, and we look at the fact that what the copies we have of those ancient writers are very few, really, in comparison to the New Testament. But there's no one out there questioning whether they're authentic, searching for the historical Tacitus or the historical Pliny or the historical Herodotus. Yet, when it comes to the New Testament, there's massive questioning. There's massive revisionism. There's massive doubt. Yet what we have by way of ancient records of the New Testament writings is far superior to what, and far older than what we have for these other writings. So basically, what I'm saying here is that there's really an effort to, there's a far greater effort to doubt, to question, to deny the existence of Jesus than there ever is for any other figure, any other character, or any other writing that's out there pre or post-Christianity. Now, I come up to the conclusion. We're doing well. 10 minutes? Conclusion. Only take a couple of minutes. Now, I have to say, this is only by way of whetting your appetite. This is hardly an in-depth scholarly look at these issues. When you've got something to present in 40 minutes, you're always going to be just skimming the top of the cake, getting your finger and taking the cream. It's worthwhile going further and digging deeper here. The historical evidence for the existence of Jesus of Nazareth in and outside of the Bible is as reliable as any other evidence concerning the existence of any other ancient historical figure. Not only as reliable, but probably in many respects more reliable. One may wonder whether the movement to deny the existence of Jesus or deny his divinity and his resurrection from the dead has more to do with his teachings than with history. It is the following teachings of Jesus which so many in our postmodern pseudo-sophistication prefer did not exist. What many hope does not exist is not the historical Jesus, but the following sayings and teachings of Jesus is what they prefer did not exist, in my opinion. He's teaching to love our neighbour and our enemies. He's teaching on the value of our souls compared to all the treasures of the world, in a world that doesn't believe in the soul anymore or doesn't want to believe in the soul anymore. He's teaching on turning the other cheek. He's teaching on forgiving an enemy 70 times or another 70 times 7. He's teaching on forgiveness as embodied in the prodigal son story. He's teaching on the good shepherd. He's teaching on being pure of heart. And this is where it really gets hard, doesn't it? His teachings on being pure of heart, his teachings on not committing adultery in the heart. I mean, how many people are out there today, you know, supporting those websites? What is Ashley Madison and all that as the norm and what's good and right and proper, etc.? He's combining of meekness with power, gentleness with authority. He's showing mercy to the poor and repentant. He's keeping continued company with the poor, powerless and sinners. He's fleeing from the poor who tried to make him king. He's teaching that power was to serve, not to lord it over others. These teachings are now so countercultural and for many so uncomfortable, so politically incorrect, so unwanted, and so necessary to efface from the modern world. And this is my contention here. The desire to deny the existence of Jesus or to deny his divinity is really an effort to extinguish from the world his core teachings that are so in contradiction with the revolutionary mindset of our contemporary world. Christians should therefore still be comfortable almost 2,000 years later, to not only openly believe that Jesus existed, but with the Apostle Thomas, proclaim with great confidence, proclaim Jesus as my Lord and my God.
That was Robert Haddad with Jesus, Fact or Fiction. For more from the University Chaplaincies, and for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au. www.jesusofnazareth.org.au.